From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Linda Moulton Howe joins us with stories of high strangeness, followed by conversations with Linda. Here's what's happening. Around the country over the past couple days, protesters taking to the streets in solidarity with those who have done the same in Baltimore in response to the death of Freddie Gray, the 25-year-old man who died in police custody. Sizable demonstrations took place in New York City, Boston, Minneapolis, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and there were also protests in Ferguson, Missouri, in many ways the catalyst for the most visible anti-police brutality activism over the last several months. And also sources are saying tonight that the medical examiner found that Freddie Gray died as a result of slamming his head against the inside of a police van, breaking his neck. The medical examiner's report, contained in the police report, handed over to the state attorney, found that Gray's wound was consistent with the bolt inside the back of the police van. Strange story. Baltimore police said their investigation into the events leading to the death of Gray, whose death in police custody sparked protests, rioting, looting, have now been turned over to state officials. Chris Geo, of course, has got his finger on the pulse of geopolitical atmosphere for decades. Let's check in with Chris on this story. Chris, these things haven't gone away yet. I want your overall perspective on what you've seen over the last couple days.
George, I hate to be the bearer of bad news every time I come on the show, but things are really gearing up as we move into 2015. The Baltimore riots, they've initiated martial law. There's a citywide curfew. The mayor is assuring that people are going to get justice for Freddie Gray, but this protest is different from what I've been able to see in this situation. People are not only looting Nike shoes and big-screen TVs, but the majority of people are looting food, water, diapers, napkins, toilet paper. This isn't a typical riot. And so it begs the question, why exactly are people rioting? Mothers are saying that they're doing it because they can't feed their children. There was one video that came out where a man was seen coming out of a convenience store, and the journalist asked him, how does this help the situation? And he says, it doesn't help the situation, but it helps ease my hunger pains. So that begs the question, what is the real economic situation in Baltimore? Is it as bad as Detroit and just underreported? Or are these police brutality stories a plan to demonize the local police in order to nationalize them under Obama's 21st century policing program, who Mayor Stephanie Rawlins-Blake is definitely a part of?
Good observation. Chris Geo, of course, is the founder of Truth Frequency Radio. He's also the spokesperson for My Patriot Supply. A former commander of U.S. nuclear forces are taking U.S. and Russian missiles off high alert. Might be a good way to keep a possible cyber attack from starting a nuclear war, although neither country appears willing to increase the lead time to prepare for the weapons for launch. The retired General James Cartwright said in an interview that de-alerting the arsenals could foil hackers by reducing the chance of firing a weapon in response to a false warning of an attack. I think he's right on. A shark attack that killed a 65-year-old woman, Hawaii's third fatal encounter since 2013, has prompted officials now in Maui to close several beaches, and sightings in California spurred warnings as well on popular beaches. A devil-fearing mother faces life in jail in Russia for drowning her baby during an exorcism. The woman carried out the makeshift exorcism on her three-year-old in the bathroom of their Russian apartment. She filled the bath with holy water, she thought, in a bid to wash the devil away after seeing hate in her daughter's eyes. The lifeless body of the three-year-old was discovered by the horrified husband who came home from work. Modifying the DNA of embryos is a line that should not be crossed, according to a leading figure in U.S. research. Dr. Francis Collins, the National Institutes of Health director, was responding to reports that the first embryos had been modified in China. He says, don't go there. People who develop cancer have shorter lifespans. A new test which can predict about with 100% accuracy whether a person will develop cancer up to 13 years in the future has now been devised by scientists. The university scientists discovered that a tiny but significant change already happening in the body more than a decade before cancer is diagnosed, and they believe that this test could truly help people. Probably would. NASA's messenger mission to Mercury has reached an explosive conclusion. After 10 years in space, four in orbit, now fully out of fuel, the spacecraft smashed into a region near Mercury's North Pole. And it's time to check into all things space with astronomer Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. What do you got for us, Stephen?
Hi, George. Great things happening. Again, as you talk about the messenger spacecraft, we go to the other side of the solar system, and we talk about things happening with, don't forget, folks, the New Horizons spacecraft. George, we've probably been talking about this on the show with other guests, but it was launched back in 2006, and the news right now is this, and it's big. The spacecraft is about 60 million miles from Pluto. And get a load of this, it's actually getting images of the object about as good as the Hubble Space Telescope. And George, we're seeing polar cap or two on the surface of Pluto. So it's going to get there in July, a big news story. And just to put everybody's mind at ease, the size of the spacecraft, George, is about the size of a grand piano, weighs a little over 1,000 pounds. And my professor in college, Dr. Clyde Tombaugh, the discoverer of Pluto, would probably be turning in his grave, you think? Knowing that this object has an atmosphere, it has many moons, and we're just about to get to see some cool things there. But in the sky, very quickly, over the weekend, if you look around 9 p.m., folks, look to the northwest. You'll see Venus. Follow it up to the left to Jupiter. You'll see the beautiful full moon coming up this weekend, George, the full flower moon. And then the planet Saturn, so you can see all this in the sky. Great updates at drsky.com. And, of course, visit our photorecon.net aviation site, where our photo team, George, of Joe and Bo are right there in California now at the Planes of Fame Air Show, Chino, California. We'll have updates, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, Stephen. Thank you. And what else is up in the skies? Time to check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. What kind of week have we had, Peter?
Well, good evening, George. It's been a busy week, and I was amused or interested to hear Dr. Sky talk about Venus. I hear about that planet probably a dozen times a night. I wish it were fewer. But a number of reports, and I'm going to close with a report from our favorite city, McMinnville, Oregon, where
all right,
the McMinnville UFO Festival is coming up in about 2 weeks. Hope to see people there. But I've got to begin with a correction. Last two appearances, I've talked about a dramatic sighting up over British Columbia, a number of white objects in formation. Turns out that that was the second stage of the Falcon 9 launch.
Ah, okay.
And it was shedding shrouds. That's a hard one to say.
Say that 10 times, would you?
Shedding shrouds.
Be careful.
And that's why so many people were reporting it. But my congratulations to the people up in British Columbia and Lake Williams and Kamloops for beautifully accurate descriptions of what they saw. Got a very interesting report from Green Valley, Arizona. A sighting last August 12th, a bulldozer driver was sitting in the cab of his D-10 bulldozer. He looked in his rearview mirror and an object appeared to be streaking right at him. He turned around and got a photograph of it with his cell phone, and the object suddenly changed direction and streaked off. He estimated it did 1 to 2 miles in under 2 seconds. You can see the photographs on our website, ufocenter.com. Also, a number of other very interesting illustrations there. A gentleman on the 15th of January this year was driving eastbound on Interstate 10 near Lordsburg, New Mexico, down in the southwest corner of that state.
Yeah.
He saw a very strange object go by him on the highway, being chaperoned by a number of police vehicles and black or dark SUVs. It's worth going to our website just to see this gentleman's illustration of the object he saw resting on a lowboy trailer being hauled to the west. This guy could make a good living as an illustrator for any publication in the country. Finally, McMinnville, Saturday of this past week, about 8:30 p.m., three gentlemen were driving north on Hill Road on the west side of McMinnville. They saw a large sphere changing colors in rapid sequence off to the east of them. they were so taken by it, they stopped their car, they got out. Suddenly, the object just streaked up into the night sky, they said. Very interesting sighting, a good harbinger for the upcoming festival. Hope to see people there, and appreciate the time tonight, George, as always.
Always, Peter. Thank you for watching those skies for us. Lake Vostok is the largest of Antarctica's almost 400 known subglacial lakes. But what's going on there? In a moment, author Steve Alton joins us. His latest work, Vostok, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. For years, we've had Stephen Alton on the program. Of course, he has written books about the Loch Ness Monster and so many others. But his latest is called Vostok. Stephen is, of course, a New York Times best-selling author as well. And this is a fascinating story because this lake in Antarctica is got, I think, all kinds of mysteries there. Stephen, welcome back.
George, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
How did you get into Vostok? How did this happen?
Well, as you know, I wrote The Loch, and I sort of set it up as a sequel, and I couldn't have the sequel back at Loch Ness. I needed another mysterious lake. And as I started doing investigation into Vostok, I realized, I mean, this is a really amazing place. This is probably, first of all, it's located in East Antarctica, which is the coldest, most desolate location on the planet, and it's a liquid lake located 2.5 miles beneath the ice sheet. It's liquid because the pressure of the ice creates about 5,000 pounds per square inch of pressure, and there's also hydrothermal vents down there, which actually warm the water to 50 to 65 degrees, if you can believe that. But there's another amazing thing about Vostok, and back in 2001, members of SOAR, the Support Office for Aerophysical Research, they sent a reconnaissance flight over Vostok to do magnetic resonance imaging. And when they flew over Vostok, their magnetometers went nuts. And scientists from Japan and Germany later confirmed that there was a magnetic anomaly under this subglacial lake that spans 65 miles in radius.
The Russians that have been there as well, they're finding some very strange things there, Stephen, aren't they?
They are, and they suspect that there's life down there, which is pretty amazing. But once they discovered the magnetic anomaly, which was, they call it a gigantic mass, kind of mass concentration of metal, that sort of set things off because all of a sudden Vostok became classified.
Okay, so who's there right now?
Well, the Russians are there. They, of course, Vostok is part of their Antarctic station located right over the lake. But they're not allowed to penetrate the lake just yet because they have a tendency to use chemicals in the borehole that can contaminate the lake. You know, one thing I didn't mention is that this lake is about 15 million years old. It formed long before the ice sheet took over Antarctica. So you're looking at potential life forms down there that are 15 million years old.
My gosh. Now, wasn't that the area where a couple years ago we thought Russian scientists had simply vanished or disappeared? They had lost contact with them?
That's very good. There was a report about that some of the scientists disappeared.
Did they ever find them?
As far as I know, they didn't.
They did not?
No.
That's interesting. Now, the land itself, the terrain, the snow-capped area down there, does not belong to any nation, right?
Right. Antarctica belongs to the world.
Okay. They're seeing some kind of large metallic something down there, but they're not giving us full details on what it might be. Surely they've taken some kind of radar tests or something, haven't they, Stephen?
I'm sure that they have. The Jet Propulsion Lab was sort of in charge of everything, and the JPL officials got upset because the U.S. authorities basically took it away from them. They classified everything.
How big is the lake, and how big is this object?
It's a good question. The lake is actually 6,000 square miles, so this is a huge lake.
It's huge.
About 1,200 feet deep, and it actually has islands in it, if you can believe that. As far as the magnetic anomaly, that's about 65 miles in radius. So this is a big object, and it's got a lot of whatever the energy source is down there. It's still active.
65 miles in radius.
65 miles. So
oh
there have been two theories that have been thrown around. One is that it could be an ancient temple,
that,
magnetic in nature.
That sank.
That sank, sort of like an Atlantis thing.
Yeah.
Or it could be the remains of an extraterrestrial ship, which seems to be the more popular notion.
What if it's an active extraterrestrial ship that's still down there?
Well, now you're getting into the storyline of Vostok.
Yes, I am. We don't want to give it away, but we're
don't
want
to give it away, but
we're getting
that's
warm.
That's the more interesting theory, and that's where Stephen Greer gets involved.
That's right. You tapped into Stephen for some thoughts. How did that happen? How did you two hook in together?
Well, years ago I wrote the third part of Domain, which is about the Mayan calendar's doomsday prophecy, and part of it had to deal with extraterrestrials. So having watched Stephen Greer's amazing Disclosure Project on YouTube, I contacted him and asked for permission to use excerpts from the testimonials from the 2001 Disclosure Project, which he was kind enough to grant me, and I sent he and his wife a copy of the book, and they really enjoyed it. And the next thing I know, Dr. Greer is contacting me and saying, hey, I'll be in the Miami area in December 2013. Why don't we get together for dinner? Well, 2 days before my wife and I were supposed to meet Stephen Greer and his wife for dinner, we had an extraterrestrial encounter. And this is just amazing.
You?
Driving home from a movie at about 11 o'clock at night, and the skies were clear, and I look out the windshield, and I see objects moving about 500 feet overhead in staggered pairs, these amber lights, and they were ships. We got out of the car. We just stood there and watched them as they slowly passed overhead and disappeared into the ether. Never seen anything like it before. And, of course, 2 days later, we met with the Greers, and we told them about it, and we were all excited. And Dr. Greer said, you know, that happens to him a lot before people meet him for the first time because, you know, communication among extraterrestrials, it's all about consciousness.
That's right. The object that's down there, you're convinced, Stephen, that there's something there?
Well, there's definitely something there. I mean, this is coming from NATO officials, from the Jet Propulsion Lab, from and not just from the United States either. It's coming from Japan and Germany. They sent tests down as well, and they found the mass object as well.
I suspect that they already know what's down there.
I think you're absolutely right.
Well, what are they afraid? Why won't they tell us?
Well, I guess it's sort of sweeping it under the rug like all the other UFO extraterrestrial information since the New Mexico crash. You know, they keep everything bottled up. They don't want people to know about these things. You know, it used to be because they were afraid it would cause a mass panic. Now it has more to do with the fact that they've covered up the technology and they've got these secret bases, you know, which Dr. Greer has been to. And all these things are woven into Vostok. See, Vostok was actually written to be the sequel to The Lock, but the more I met with Stephen Greer, and we spent about 30 hours together, the more I realized, you know, this would make the perfect Trojan horse, that I can disseminate his information that he wants out there that he can't get past the mainstream media. So Vostok is literally a fictional Trojan horse with full of facts that people would have a hard time believing.
These life forms that are down there, Stephen, what do you think they are? Just special kinds of, sea creatures?
Well, the temperature being 50 to 65 degrees means that
that's
vegetation
warm.
Could grow down there.
Yeah.
And if you have vegetation, you have, you know, a food chain. So they can be anything from small bacteria to larger fish to creatures that date back to the Miocene era.
All right, stay with us, Stephen. We're going to come back in a moment and continue talking about your latest work, Vostok. There is some kind of object there in that lake in Antarctica. What the heck is it? And as I mentioned, I suspect we probably already know. Welcome back with Steve Alton talking about his work, Vostok. We'll take some of your calls this half hour as well. So this area that is somewhat, I guess, could you say it's been cordoned off, that it's off limits to just about anybody except governments?
Well, it's hard to cordon it off because it's such a vast area. I mean, you know, 6,000 square miles is a pretty big chunk of ice to cordon off. However, they can, you know, prevent flights from going over it and doing more research. But the magnetic anomaly has already been spotted. The question is, as you mentioned earlier, is they probably already know what's down there using whether it's satellite reconnaissance or other technologies, but they're not going to tell us what's down there.
If it's an extraterrestrial craft that's been down there for a long, long time, what do you think happened to it? Why hasn't it left?
Well, we're getting into the storyline of Vostok a little bit, but I want to be careful about what I say. But put it this way, 15 million years ago, before there was ice covering Antarctica, Antarctica was, you know, tundra, but it was also rainforest as well. And so if we were visited by extraterrestrials 15 million years ago, it's possible that they seeded Homo sapien man. That DNA could be the missing link.
The Zechariah Sitchin theory.
Exactly.
This lake, then, do you believe if all the ice melted around it, Stephen, that it is surrounded by landmass?
That's exactly right. It is surrounded by landmass. It was a lake before it was covered by ice. And as I mentioned earlier, there's actually islands in the lake. And they create... See, the lake, the pressure of the ice, the weight of the ice on top of this lake creates this huge pressure that keeps the lake liquid. But it also has an encapsulated atmosphere, scientists discovered, and that allows for life forms to be harbored down there.
Could it be an underwater, fully functional city?
Theoretically, that's possible. I mean, especially around this magnetic anomaly. It's just difficult to get down there without polluting it, and that's what's keeping us from getting down there. Now, what's interesting is that, you know, whenever I do research for a book, it's very important to me to get the facts right and make it as interesting as possible for the reader. So
right.
In order to get down to Vostok, I contacted Bill Stone. Bill Stone owns Stone Aerospace. Stone Aerospace is the company that is being invested in to get us to Europa and explore the oceans of Europa. So Bill Stone walked me through exactly how you would get down to Vostok, because he's using the same technology to get down to Europa. And what they have is these things called Valkyrie lasers, which is a laser submarine, for lack of a better description. And it bores down into the ice, and the ice seals behind it. And it's important that the ice seal behind it, because that keeps the pressure from exploding like a geyser. See, the Russians had a lot of problem with their boreholes, because they'd send the drill down there, and then if it hit the water, the pressure would explode back up in their faces.
And they did get a lot of water that shot up, didn't they?
Yeah, a lot of water and kerosene and some other elements that they were putting down the borehole.
How deep is the ice from the surface down?
It's 13,000 feet, about 2.5 miles.
Wow. And yet underneath it, it's pretty warm, as you said. The
liquid water, 65 degrees at its warmest spot by the hydrothermal vents.
Do you think there's active life down there? Fish life, for example?
Well, we're talking about the Miocene era, so you have everything from small creatures to some pretty big ones like Leviathan Melvi, which was the Miocene sperm whale, to some pretty big crocodiles, to some other pretty amazing life forms that coincidentally all happen to appear in the book.
This area, Stephen, would be fascinating even without this so-called object down there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, because you're talking about the most unexplored realm on the planet that is in the same exact shape it was 15 million years ago before it was covered by ice. And this is what has got scientists all excited, because it's really a time capsule, It's not just the lake. So if they can get down there without contaminating it, we just don't know what they're going to discover.
Now, there's no way that this 60-mile radius object would be a natural landmass down there, is there?
No, no possibility at all. In fact, scientists have said that the anomaly is so large that it can't be the product of daily change in the magnetic field. The sheer size of the anomaly is just too big to be anything like that.
Anybody ever report, of course, you know, there's no population there, but have we ever had any UFO reports in that region?
There have been UFO reports over Antarctica, as a matter of fact. So, you know, that all plays into the story.
Coming and going? What about submersibles?
I don't know about submersibles, but that's a good question.
All right, let's take some calls here with Stephen Alton. We go to Mary in Dallas, Texas, first-time caller. Hello, Mary, go ahead.
Well, I've been watching a series on the History Channel called Ancient Aliens.
Oh, sure. We're on that.
Right. And one of the things, yes, I've seen you on there. One of the things that I found fascinating is they think there's a portal in Lake Michigan because they have seen discs fly down there and not come out. And I wanted to know if your guest has heard of anything like
that. Stephen, have you heard of that? And do you theorize anything like that in your book, Vostok?
Actually, the time portal is a major part of Vostok, so Mary hit it right on the button. I haven't heard anything about Lake Michigan, but on January 27th of this year, I was with Dr. Stephen Greer and a group of about 25 people on one of his CE-5, Close Encounter 5 missions in Vero Beach, and we had an incredible encounter with twin ET ships that rose out of the ocean and then went back down again, and everything was videotaped on night vision cameras.
I know when you write your books, the novels, you always like them to be as factual as possible. So when you look at Vostok, where's the fact and where's the fiction?
Really good question, because I call my work faction instead of fiction. And and the Trojan horse of Vostok is really a lot of the information that Dr. Greer gave me, because that's the stuff that people need to understand, the JFK assassination, the William Colby assassination. William Colby was Clinton's CIA director who was cooperating with Dr. Greer, who wanted to get these black shell technologies out into the world to replace fossil fuels, and Majestic 12 put him in the Potomac River and killed him, and all this kind of information is all woven into the Vostok storyline, because it's important, because people need to understand that these things are not only true, but there's a black ops cabal working that really pulls the puppet strings in this world, and they're controlling this technology. They're controlling the information about extraterrestrials and UFOs, and they're keeping basically the world under their thumb.
Next up, we go to Tom in the Bronx in New York. Thomas, take it away.
Yes, nice to chat with you. I'd like to say that if you look at Australia and you look at the South Pole, they almost fit like a puzzle. And I wonder if that part of Australia originally floated away from Australia and wound up down under like that, you know, under the world.
Well, there is that theory that if you would push all the land masses back together again, they would fit exactly alike. Stephen, what do you think of the possibilities?
Yeah, that's absolutely true, that continental drift is what brought the continents to where they are now, and at one point, all the continents, like you mentioned, were all one landmass called Pangaea.
Louisville, Kentucky, we go now. They're going to be very active on Saturday, the Kentucky Derby running. Terry's with us. Hi, Terry, go ahead.
Good morning, George and Steve. You know, I got to thinking when I got to listen to y'all talking about how warm it is down there, could that be the entrance to inner Earth, and could possibly dinosaurs be living down there?
I don't know about dinosaurs. Well, what do you think? You're an expert on the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, 15 million years ago, there were some pretty nasty creatures around. So if they were in the lake, probably had an ocean access. So if it had an ocean access, you never know what's down there.
Stephen, I'd always heard stories that the Nazis, after the war, fled in submarines and went to Antarctica. Had you ever heard that?
I have heard that. I don't necessarily subscribe to that, but I have read that. I think they prefer the temperate zone in South America a little bit more.
Yeah, who would blame them, right?
Yeah.
Well, now give us your overall thoughts then in perspective in terms of reality. Are we going to get some answers about Vostok? I mean, will this book, this novella, I guess, will this book help spearhead some kind of drive to get some information?
Well, that's what Stephen Greer and I are hoping to do, because it's difficult to get pierce the mainstream bubble that surrounds the truth, because, you know, as you know, the CIA controls all the major newspapers and they kill stories whenever they want to. But if the masses demanded the truth, you know, then perhaps we can get somewhere. Because we've had, you know, President Clinton, he wanted to investigate UFOs and he was warned off by Colby's assassination. And Obama, Dr. Greer briefed John Podesta. He provided the briefing to John Podesta, who was Obama's advisor, and that happened in 2009. And Obama was really interested in following up these things. But sure, what happened was he went over to Norway to get his Pulitzer, his Nobel Prize, and MJ-12 shot off a scalar weapon from one of their satellites.
That was that spiral, right?
That was the blue spiral, exactly. And you know, they claimed it was a Russian weapon test. Of course, it wasn't. And that pretty much told Obama that just because you're president doesn't mean that we can't take you out.
Podesta just came out several months ago and said that one of his biggest regrets in political office was not getting to the bottom of the UFO story.
That's exactly right. I think he did that on February 13th, and it was Dr. Greer who provided him with the briefing for Obama. So it sort of all works itself out.
Steve, what does Stephen Greer think about this object down there at the bottom of Vostok?
Well, you know, he, again, is open-minded to it being an extraterrestrial ship or some other type of object like that. I mean, Dr. Greer has seen some pretty incredible things and made communication with extraterrestrials, and I don't think it's too far to say he's the world's foremost authority on those things.
Stephen's website is stevealten.com, spelled A-L-T-E-N, not like the city in Illinois. Steve Alten, we've got the link for you at coasttocoastam.com. And I noticed it's on Amazon already, and lots of people are starting to pick up on this. It's a great story.
Yeah, it's really a fun read, but again, like you mentioned, there's so much fact in it that it leaves you wondering what's real and what's not.
I mean, I try to visualize millions of years ago, a huge object, UFO, almost the size of a major, huge metropolitan city, maybe even bigger, 65 miles in radius, plunges into Lake Vostok for whatever reason. It crashed or it's hiding there, and it stayed there. It's like the movie The Abyss, where the objects started to rise and left. Wouldn't that be something, Steve, that in front of all these people who are hiding down there and doing research, this object leaves from the bottom of Vostok and just takes off?
And George, if you were an extraterrestrial and you did want to leave your ship to the future ruling species of the planet, what better place to put it than under 2.5 miles of ice?
Which would preserve it for a long, long time.
Exactly.
Let's go to Richard, truck driving in Texas. Hey, Rich, go ahead.
Yes, sir. George?
Hi.
Hi. I was just listening to this, and I was thinking the series Stargate.
Mm-hmm.
They covered a lot of this as far as fiction,
right,
with what was going on underneath Antarctica. Now, could this be part of the I ain't saying this is fake or anything, could this be part of the way of the leaking exactly what's going on down there that they don't want us to know?
You know, we've always wondered if governments, black ops programs, utilize movies, books, television shows to kind of get the word out. I mean, people have always suspected, for example, that, you know, Steven Spielberg was in the know whenever he would do movies like Close Encounters of the Third Kind or E.T. the Extraterrestrial, or that George Lucas was in on something. What do you think of that, Stephen? That theory that information is leaked through media that way in order to tell us, but not tell us.
I agree 100% because that's what we're doing with Vostok. We're sort of using it as a Trojan horse of fiction to fly below the radar to get the word out to the masses. And by the way, the X-File movie, the coordinates that were used in the X-File movie in Antarctica are the coordinates of the magnetic anomaly.
That's true. So they knew something, obviously. Lewis is in Roanoke, Virginia. First-time caller. Hey, Lewis, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
I was just calling in about when you talked about the Nazis going to Antarctica.
We talked a little bit about that. Stephen, any truth at all that some of the Nazis made their way there?
I think that's more fiction than fact on that one.
Okay, so you think they went primarily to Argentina, places like that?
Yeah, because, I mean, once you get to Antarctica, there's not a whole lot for you to do other than freeze.
Yeah, that's true, too. Unless you have a nice little house there, but who would want to live there, right?
And Vostok is the coldest place in Antarctica. I think that's where the record temperatures were set. I think it was minus 147 degrees Fahrenheit, so that's not the place you want to be.
Are there any indigenous people down there at all?
No, that's the only continent on the planet. There's no indigenous people.
Nothing.
The only thing are the penguins.
Just the penguins, that's it. What about polar bears, anything like that?
I think the polar bears are in North Pole. I don't think they're in Antarctica. There are other creatures. There's seals and things like that and whales. So there's a lot of life forms, but I think penguins are about the only land creatures.
It does remind me of a mini Europa, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Stephen, only about a minute left. I'd like you to, one, tell us what you're working on next, and then give us some information about your website.
Well, I did want to tell you that the last time I was on, I had mentioned, because the Meg movie is looking like a real reality right now.
Good for you.
That I had spent 4 months rewriting the Meg, original Meg book, combining it with the never-before-printed prequel Meg Origins, and we added 17 original images. And so we have this fantastic book that we only made 5,000 copies for Meg fans, and we had reserved a bunch of them for your listeners, and if you remember, listeners crashed the site.
Yeah, we did.
So to prepare for that tonight, we saved about 300 books for Coast to Coast listeners. We boosted the safety codes for tonight so the site won't crash. So if your listeners are still interested in getting one of these collector edition hardbacks, they can go to www.rebelpress.com and get one. And with the Meg movie on the horizon, the books are starting to sell for about twice the amount on eBay.
Super. Rebelbooks.com. Stephen, thank you. Let's keep in touch. Give our best to Stephen Greer as well. In a moment, our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, joins us with some incredible stories about Roswell, souls after death, you name it, we've got it.